Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to, and I need to make sure that this thing is unmuted. There, I think now we're working, yes. Welcome to Dr. Number 14's Best SF Show. I am Dr. Number 14, and we're going to be reviewing a couple of new shows that are out today, Eye Candy and 12 Monkeys, plus The Return of Grimm and Constantine, and then Gallivant, The Librarians, Resurrection, Agent Carter, Pretty Little Liars, and American Horror Story Freak Show. And some of these series are about to end as well, Resurrection and American Horror Story. But yeah, so that's our lineup. And I believe some other series are planning to come out in March. Bates Motel and The Returned on A&E are two that are coming out. Wayward Pines by M. Night Shyamalan is also coming out either this spring or summer. And Hannibal, the series, season three is returning not this spring but in summer, which I think is probably a better time to be viewing episodes of a cannibal while we're getting a heat wave and thinking of cooking hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill. Just think of Hannibal eating as well. Okay, so let's see. The episodes of Gallivant, episode 3 and 4, were shown last Sunday night, and they did take a dip in the ratings. They fell from a 2.0 to a 1.3 with 4.11 million viewers. Now, 1.3 isn't that bad, but certainly it did drop at least by around 30% of the viewership from the previous week. And the episodes are pretty interesting. In episode 103, Two Balls, Sidney arrives back at his hometown and they're having a ball for him because they think he's a knight. And basically, Isabella pretends to be engaged to Sid. So while they're throwing a ball for him, King Richard is throwing a ball at his castle and having his executioners play songs as he's trying to have his people enjoy that ball. And they had some interesting songs on this episode, Oi, What a Night, and Jackass in a Can, were two of the more memorable songs in that episode of Gallivant. But I liked, of the two episodes, I liked Comedy Gold, which was episode 104, where the king knows that his queen is cheating on him with the comic. And so what he tries to do is he asks the jester to make him funny so he can woo his wife. And so they had It's Comedy Gold, which was one of the songs. And then, meanwhile, Isabella, Sid, and Gallivant met up with these land pirates, which was pretty interesting. And the land pirates were led by Peter Pillage. And the song, We're the Lords of the Sea, was very good, very good song for that. And Gallivant was able to get the ship back in the water. And they sang Togetherness Will See Us Through. So they have some really neat songs on Gallivant. The plots may be a little bit weak, but the songs are pretty cool. So I just didn't know Gallivant was so far away from King Richard's castle, because it looks like he's been making this this journey now since episode 2, and now he has to travel by boat. So I have a feeling that it'll probably arrive at King Richard's probably close to the end of the series, which is episode 8. Just my prediction, so we'll see. So, we have next to review the librarians, and what they're doing is, I thought they were burning off the episodes at first just to get rid of the series, but I don't think they're doing that. I think they're trying to make it almost like a mini movie, 2-hour movie, by showing 2 episodes at a time. And it's probable, too, that they're trying to get the series done before a lot of the other shows start returning. Now, some shows return this week, but a lot of the shows on the CW are returning next week. And so The Librarians is going to be wrapping up tonight with its 9th and 10th episodes. No word yet on its renewal likelihood, but it seems to be holding its own. It did drop from a 1.3 at the beginning and sort of stabilized around a 0.9, a 1.0, and it's been hovering there. The first episode, The Rule of Three, that aired last week, episode 7, got a 0.9, which is very close to 1 with 3.445 million viewers. And then the second episode, In the Heart of Darkness, episode 8, which is the one I really liked, got a rating of 0.8, so at 2.863 million. So at this point, I'm thinking, because they only have 2 more episodes, and while it's taking a dip, I have seen other series like Dallas, which was doing a 0.6 or a 0.5, and it did get canceled just because it was probably an expensive show to make and produce. I'm thinking The Librarians, with the CG effects and things like that, isn't as expensive. So my prediction is that The Librarians probably will continue for a second season. And this, and since Noah Wiley is producing it, my guess is it will do a second season as well. Well, first episode, The Rule of Three, has to do with the high school STEM fair being held in Chicago and the librarians having to deal with witches and magic spells, and magic spells that are on phone apps. And basically, this has all been engineered by Lucinda McCabe, who's the coordinator of the STEM fair. And it's discovered about halfway through the episode, and this is when it kicks into high gear, that she's able to walk into the annex of the library, and she reveals she's Morgan Le Fay, the sorceress that was responsible for the downfall of Camelot, who was also responsible for killing King Arthur too. And she and Jenkins have a history. So my guess too is that Jenkins is also apparently immortal. We haven't yet, or at least lived a couple centuries, because he knows of Morgan Le Fay, and we don't know too much about Jenkins' story. So it probably will be revealed in an upcoming episode, but my guess, not this season, probably next season, where we find out more about Jenkins. Well, the librarians, the kids, as I say, are able to effectively ward off the magic spell with the 27 students that have it on their apps. And they use these table lakes, and they form a pentagram around the high school fair, and they channel off the mystical energy. And then Eve gets transported to where Morgan is, where they're caught between the seconds. And Morgan says that she was able to save the day, but that she's still able to escape. And at the end, Jenkins translates what Morgan has told Eve, and I guess it's in Latin, where it says, "Do not fear the villain, fear the hero instead," whatever that means. And so maybe one of the heroes is going to turn bad by the end of this season, as the powers of evil, the end is coming for all of them. So that was the first episode, and it really kicked into high gear as I said, the second half of it. The second episode in the Heart of Darkness was, I thought, pretty good because they deal with a haunted house, one of these houses that has survived centuries and has been the archetypal basis for, like, the cabin in the woods and investigations of houses by paranormal investigators. And it all centers on this one character called Katie Bender, who is running out of the place, and she sees a shadow man in the house who's abducted her friend. So the librarians do an investigation while Jenkins basically supplies them with information and says the haunted house moves around after it feeds on people, hence explaining it can travel from country to country, and they're presently in Slovakia, but it can also move to America too. And what Jenkins says is they need to find the dark heart of the house and destroy it by midnight. And they're thinking that it could be an object. And we're thinking, too, the viewers, that they have this little doll house, a replica of the haunted house, so it might be that. Well, we find out, again, after the first half of the episode, the second half again kicks into high gear, that Katie Bender was a relative of a serial killer family that basically lived in that house, killed people, and I guess because of their negative energy now, it's made the house pure evil. And Katie basically is a representation of that life force, and that she wished that she could go on living in that house and killing people. So now what they have to do, she's the dark heart, and she has to basically be done away with. And so Cassandra is able to slice her, and she turns to dust. And when the dark heart is destroyed, the house sends them a thank you note. The shadow man turns out to be this kind butler that basically is able to serve them. And so now the house is serving its intended function, which is a refuge. And the spirit of the house, the butler, will serve others. And then the house disappears at the end. So I thought that was a pretty cool ending to The Librarians. So, yeah, I like the haunted house segment a little bit better than the magic segment. But I like how they're hitting all the archetypal themes of magic with Morgan Le Fay, the ultimate haunted house, the archetype of Santa Claus. So they're dealing with these mythos each week. The dragon one was a bit pathetic because I think they could have done a much better job. In fact, when I reflect on it, maybe they should have combined the story of Morgan Le Fay with the dragon episode, and that I think would have been a much better time story, and maybe even throw in a Merlin character or something like that. But be that as it may, the dragon storyline was a bit, you know, just crazy and out there. Okay, in terms of Resurrection, episode 211, True Believer, it did drop down in the ratings from a 1.0 to a 0.8 with a 3.1 rating. And as I said, episode 210, it started to get a lot better, with Jacob being taken by Margaret and they getting him back. And this one kicks into more high gear because they introduce the character of Preacher James. And we even find out about his last name. It's Goodwin, and he has a tombstone in a cemetery. They show that later in the episode. So we find out a little bit more about Preacher James. And you know that weird segment with the where Preacher James got hit with lightning and it formed a crescent-shaped burn mark, and where Bellamy goes there and then these insects fly out and they form into a tree and then disappear. That was all a dream because Preacher James and Robert, a.k.a. Bellamy, are channeling each other's thoughts. So they're mind-sharing at times, especially in their dreams. And so Bellamy is having dreams about the preacher, And then Denny supplies the background because she remembers him when she was alive. And Jenny remembers his sermons, and they were fun. And he supposedly cured people and received money from the congregation. But he was a charlatan back then. He deceived people. Now he's living a more honest lifestyle, and he's really helping people. And so what he does is he's developing a following in the town of Arcadia. He brings back Mrs. Anderson's deceased husband, and people say it's a miracle that he's able to bring people back from the dead. Now, I'm wondering how much this is linked up with the return coming back, being resurrected. Obviously, there's a connection here that is yet to be made. And Bellamy thinks that what James is doing, because he heard about his con artist history, he thinks it's a trick. But James basically says he did bring Mr. Anderson back. Meanwhile, Lucille is contacted by Henry, and they're supposed to set up a meeting at Twain's restaurant, but he never shows. And then Henry appears to Marty, and he says, "Thank you for bringing Jacob back." And then Marty wakes up, and he realizes it was a dream. And then there's a commotion intersection, and they see Henry's brother, Fred, finds Henry is passed out in a car. Apparently he died of a stroke or a heart attack. And so he's dead now, and Fred and Maggie are grieving. So that was something of a bit of a surprise, even though they did say someone dies in the previews on resurrection. So Lucille thinks Henry is coming back because she wants Preacher James to bring Henry back. And James says he can do it, but it comes at a cost. Of course, all things come at a cost. And he can't do it alone. And he needs Bellamy's help. So Lucille, as well as Maggie, tell Bellamy to help James. So they're going to work together. So this is where it gets a little bit mystical. James has to die to retrieve Henry. And so a life for a life, so to speak. So someone needs to shoot him. But Bellamy can't do it, so Fred, his brother, does, shoots James. He falls into the hole that they've dug for him, and then Henry is not appearing back, so Lucille is told Henry isn't coming back, but then they get a knock at the door, and James is there, and he's alive, and he's with Henry, and so Lucille is elated by all of this. And then James says he senses there are others there on the other side waiting for what he doesn't know. And in the coming attractions, it's very interesting because they're talking about resurrected people around the globe. And so this isn't just happening in Arcadia. So like I said before, if this episode of True Believer was introduced at the start of season two, this would have been a much better show. In fact, I would say this is the best show, best episode of the second season to date. And maybe even it comes up there with some of the season one storylines too. So, yeah. Okay. So now let us review Eye Candy and Agent Carter. Well, Eye Candy, K3U, it stars Victoria Justice, who was in Victoria or whatever the name of that show was that was on the Nickelodeon. And now she has her own series. And basically, the ratings aren't very good on this MTV show. It only averaged like 0.2, which is not very good. When you have episodes of Teen Wolf doing 0.8, 0.9, 1.0, to get to, you know, a fourth of the Teen Wolf rating isn't very good, with only 589,000 people watching. And it's about Lindy, who had a sister, Sarah, who was abducted by this man in a van, and she could do nothing to save her. So 3 years later, she's still devoted to looking for her sister, Sarah, but she's also trying to help parents find other children who's been missing, using her company's equipment to do so. And we find out that she was arrested and got 6 months parole. She's become a cyber vigilante, where she's broken the law in terms of her investigation and trying to find these missing people. And now she's going after people that are on Flirtual, and it's an internet dating site. And she gets these profiles of people that are missing, and she's tracking them down. And her friend Sophia has developed a profile for her, Eye Candy. And so what she's doing is she's meeting these people at the club, and she's trying to see which ones are the freaks, the stalkers. And while she doesn't meet up, or we don't know, she doesn't meet up with the person that's actually killing them, there is one that is stalking her via the camera. He uses a camera on her laptop. And then basically one of the people that she liked and wanted to go out with is killed by this stalker, and her phone, because her phone is missing, is stuck in his mouth. And the text reads, "I thought we were exclusive, Lindy." So he starts stalking her. They can't track the text. It's untraceable. But she thinks the serial killer is responsible. So Ben, her ex-cop boyfriend, stays with her. And during the course of this episode, Ben's pic is relayed to her via her screen. And basically she finds him on a rooftop with his throat slashed. And the text on the computer says, "We're just getting started." So she's going after these serial killers. It seems a little bit like Pretty Little Liars, a little bit with the texting by phone with A and stuff like that. But it just doesn't hold its own, because Lindy is not a very interesting character to begin with. And so I could see why people either may have tuned in and didn't watch it, or just the premise of it doesn't sound very interesting or exciting. Now, Agent Carter is a little bit more interesting. I think it's definitely more interesting than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And again, it's Peggy Carter, who was Steve Rogers' girlfriend in the first Captain America movie. I like the time period, the 19th place in. And but it did drop in the ratings a little bit, from a 1.9 to a 1.5 in its second outing, with 5.05 million viewers. And they're trying to find out what happened to Howard Stark, who took the weapons from Howard Stark. And we know Howard Stark is the father of Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man. So they're providing some of the backstory. And Jarvis, Stark's servant or butler, is basically investigating Stark's disappearance with Peggy Carter. And Jarvis is going to play a role in the Avengers 2 movie, and he supplies the voice. He's the voice that Tony Stark responds to the computer in Iron Man 1 through Iron Man 3. And I believe Jarvis is also going to be the android Vision in the Avengers 2 Age of Ultron movie. So it's neat to see him now just as a regular guy helping Agent Carter to try to find who made that hole in Stark's vault. So basically episode 3 is what should have been done in maybe episode 1, where both Peggy and Jarvis scale down in the hole into the sewer tunnels. And apparently the sewers go into water place where the docks, where they think that basically the Stark's weapons are. And Brennus, the villain who died in the last episode, he formed sort of like a heart with the scroll through it. And basically, they find that symbol on one of the boats called the Heartbreak. So they explore the boat, and they find crates that belong to Stark within it. And they have some futuristic weapons. So Peggy can't reveal she found the item. So Jarvis phones it in, makes a fake, has a fake accent instead of the British voice that he has. And while Jarvis is anonymously phoning in the location of Stark's inventions, Peggy is confronted by a thug, and they fight, and she gets downed. And before she can get killed, Jarvis saves her, but then he gets beaten up. And then Peggy uses one of Stark's devices on the thug and immobilizes his arm, and she knocks him out. And then the people that she works for, the SSR agents, come in. They find the crates. They take the thug away. And then one of the agents, Pizminski, who has the thug with him, he's shot along with the thug by this group that's taken the weapon. So we're not any closer to finding the answers. But it was more interesting, I think, this episode, because they really did a nice interaction and interplay between Agent Carter and Jarvis, the butler. So that was Agent Carter. And then we have American Horror Story and Pretty Little Liars, which was on Tuesday and Wednesday, respectively. So let's do American Horror Story Freak Show, Episode 412, Showstoppers. Dropped down in the ratings a little bit from a 1.5 to a 1.4 with 2.938 million viewers. And I do like American Horror Story now, the last episodes, because they have Neil Patrick Harris in it now, and he wanted to always appear in an American Horror Story, and now he is. And basically, he is now the new owner of the freak show, Chester, and he's toasted by Elsa. And then Richard Spencer is also thanked as the feast commences. And Elsa gives him a present, and it's the head of the Morbidity Museum owner. And what they do is they pursue Richard into the carnival, and he's attacked by the freaks. And we find by the end of the episode that they made Spencer into a freak himself. They've cut off some of his limbs. They've mutilated him. So the freaks have gotten back at Spencer, who has killed some of their own. So Jimmy is told by Elsa that Del killed Ma Petite, his father, and Jimmy is very angry. And Elsa's friend, is going to make Jimmy new hands, because if you recall, Richard had them cut off so he could sell them to the Morbidity Museum. Well, Elsa's friend comes, and he actually makes hands for him, but he gives him lobster claws, the claws that he had taken off. So that's how Jimmy gets his new hands. Meanwhile, Dandy goes to the twins' tent. He's hired a gumshoe to get all the information he can on Chester, and he has a file on Chester, so he leaves the file with the twins, and the twins find out that Chester has killed his wife, has killed his wife's lover, and so Dot and Bet, the twins, don't want to be Chester's assistant anymore, and Chester wants to saw them in half, so they refuse. So because they've broken up with Chester, Maggie volunteers to go in the box. So he manacles her feet, and he sees his dead wife, Lucy, in the form of Maggie. And so he does saw her in half, literally, and the freaks are disturbed by all of this. And Marjorie, the vet, his dummy, starts laughing, and he just goes completely berserk, completely bananas. And so Chester brings Marjorie to the police station and says he killed the doll, which is very strange. And so Dandy then becomes the new owner of the freak show. And so that's how that episode ends. And the finale basically takes place this Wednesday night. And I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit longer than an hour because they have a lot to finish up on. Is Elsa going to be leaving the freak show? What is going to happen to the freaks now that Dandy is the new owner? So, don't know. So, Pretty Little Liars, episode 515, Fresh Meat, received a rating of a 0.9 with 2.024 million viewers. Toby sees Allison in the women's correctional facility, and on a research of Mona's property, he finds a bloody knife there, and Toby remembers it. It belongs to his family, and Caleb is worried his prints are on the knife, so he and Spencer find this knife, and then they go to the school, and they turn on the kiln at the school, and they're going to burn the knife, but someone traps Caleb in the kiln. And then Spencer gets him out, but then the knife is gone. It's missing. And so we don't know what's going on there. Meanwhile, Aria is being rejected from every school. She's on the waiting list at Talmadge College. So she thinks that basically whoever A is getting his revenge on her. And as this is going on, Ezra is opening up a store that books, serves food, and Emily wants to do the catering for the event, but she's not able to do a very decent job. So Ezra invites a professional chef, Talia, to help her out. And basically, Talia and Emily become friendly at the store's opening. And Toby sees Spencer's there. And Toby knows she went back for the knife and is very upset. And then, to top it all off, to really throw things up, kink in the works, Hannah's mom becomes friendly with Jason, who's Allie's brother. And Jason kisses Hannah's mom. And Hannah comes home and sees Jason exiting the bedroom. And was very weird that Hannah's mom is interacting with the younger guy. Did not see that one coming. And then Allison gets a note at the end at the correctional facility, and it says, "Your friends will see you soon," whatever that means, which we don't know. Okay, so the Friday night lineup was very interesting. Grimm and Constantine returned, and then 12 Monkeys premiered too. There was the return of Helix, but there just wasn't enough time to watch that, so we will be reviewing Helix next week. But let's do our Grimm song, and then we can review Grimm and Constantine. And I liked both of them, actually. So let's do Grimm Season 2. Here we go. Okay, and Grimm, the Wesenreen, the purists, the Wesen purists, have taken Monroe, and they take him to this factory, and he meets another person there called Terry, and when he escapes, he sees that Terry has been burnt up horribly and has been staked, and the same fate is in store for Monroe. Meanwhile, this is pretty good episode because Nick and Hank get Wu out of jail. And they disclose to Wu everything. They show Wu the weapons and the books that the aunt had given Nick in his van. And Nick says the creatures are Wesson, and he hunts them, and he's a Grimm. And Wu is handling it pretty well. And even the captain confides in Wu and tells him not to tell anyone about what Nick and Hank have revealed to him, and says also that it's all true. And so meanwhile, the Wesson Rhine Grand Master basically is going to be conducting a tribunal, and Monroe is going to be sacrificed. Meanwhile, Rosalie is staying at Juliet's, and we saw in the end of the last episode that Juliet sees her face change into a Wesson. So Rosalie angers Juliet, and she vogues and rips Rosalie's throat out as the creature. But it was all a nightmare. And so the final thing is Officer Acker, one of the police guys, is involved with Monroe's kidnapping. So he might be possibly Wesson or just an aide to the Wesson Rhine. So, yeah, it didn't move quite as quickly as I wanted it to because it was a to-be-continued story. But it has a lot of things happening where Juliet has become Wesson, Monroe is going to be sacrificed, and all of that. So, yeah, I thought it was a pretty good episode. And then Constantine, episode 109, The Saint of Last Resorts, part two, it dropped in the ratings because they moved it before Grimm, whereas before it was after Grimm. So Grimm held onto its time slot, and the ratings, it held up pretty much. But for Constantine, it actually dropped because it was on at the 7 o'clock hour. So it dropped from a 1.0 to a 0.8 with 3.08 million viewers. So as we saw last time before the at the mid-season finale, John was shot by the nun, Anne Marie, because he was going to sacrifice the baby. And Anne Marie saved the baby by shooting him. And so to be cured of his shot, he invited the demon Pazuzu to possess his body to heal him, which it did. But now in a couple days, he's going to be fully possessed by the demon. So Sister Anne Marie, Chaz's friend, and Zed congregate in Mexico City. They get him out of prison because he's killed members of this street gang, and they get him out of the prison, and then they're going to perform an exorcism. And Anne Marie starts it, but John's demon is just too strong, and he starts levitating. And then Zed tells Annie that she needs to believe that John can be saved. And so with Zed's encouragement, Annie expels the demon. The mark on John's arm disappears, and he's free. And Manny is watching all these events, Manny the angel. And Annie leaves at the end, but she tells him that evil is coming. And they only have like four more episodes of this series. So I'm hoping that they don't end on a cliff, but that they do a halfway decent wrap up, because I don't think this show is going to come back with ratings like 0.8, which are the ratings of the CW shows like Vampire Diaries in the originals. Okay, now 12 Monkeys, I was very impressed with. So I liked it. I know it's based on a Terry Gilliam sci-fi fantasy comedy, but they made it much more serious, 12 Monkeys. And it has to do with James Cole, a time traveler from 2043, who has to change timeline so that he can save the planet. Because in 2017, actually, a plague killed 7 billion people, a virus. And it's mutating, and it's killing more people. And some who survived are immune, like him, James Cole. And the scientists found this project, Splinter Project, and what they're doing is, instead of teleporting him back time, they call it splintering him. And as he's splintered, he suffers from brain injuries, like grand mal seizures. And what he has to do is he has to find Dr. Cassie Rayleigh, and he knows about her, and he's looking for Leland Frost. And Leland is the one that's responsible for this plague, because as he explains to Cassie, that she worked for the CDC, while she was looking for a cure, she died. but she transmitted something, a broadcast, and said that Leland Frost was the architect of the plague. And she mentioned Coe's name, too. But she still doesn't know Leland Frost, because when Coe visits her back in 2013, she has no idea. But he says he's going to be coming back in 2015 at this hotel in Philadelphia. So she waits for him in 2015 at this hotel, and he does show up. And he's still bleeding from the wound that the police inflicted on him back in 2013. And so basically she gets a friend of hers to investigate who Leland Frost is, and it's actually Leland Goines. And he's going to be at a party in Washington, D.C. And so Cole and Dr. Rayleigh, Cassie, go there, and they meet up with Cassie's past boyfriend, Aaron. And they also spot Goines, and at one point, Cole points a gun at him, and he gets tasered by these guards, and Cassie is taken too. And Leland takes Cole and Cassie to this facility. And Leland says he remembers meeting him back in 1987. I guess this is something that's happened in James's future, 28 years ago. And Leland remarks that he looks exactly the same as he did back then, and he wants to know what he did that is making him pursue him so much and want to kill him. So Leland said he's going to cut him up and see what makes him tick. But what Coe does is he puts Cassie's watch that she has next to the one he has. And basically it's the same watch, and the timepieces are acting weird. And then the time slows as Cole is able to get Cassie out and leave. And then an explosion occurs. And Leland starts shooting them, and he collapses. And then Cole shoots Leland twice in the head. Yet Cole is still there. He explains to Cassie that the reason for the explosion is objects from two different time periods can't touch each other, because it's a paradox, and a paradox, time won't allow a paradox, and that's what caused the explosion. But the shooting of Leland didn't stop what's to come, because Cole is still there, and then Cole splinters and returns to 2043. He reports that he killed Leland, but it didn't change anything, and obviously, he's found out that there's others, and there's this sign with this monkey face and these 12 symbols. And it's the army of the 12 monkeys that he's got to stop, hence the term 12 monkeys. So it's got this time travel piece in it that can you change time? It's got, you know, a female, so to speak, companion. I see James Coe, not as colorful as a doctor, but he knows more, and he's trying to change things, and the companion of the doctor, I see Cassie being that. So yeah, I really liked 12 Monkeys. I thought it was pretty cool. Okay, well, we've done our wrap up of shows. It's getting on the 45 minute mark, so we'll play our theme song, and we'll be returning next week with more episodes to review. So until then, sleep tight.